for me, I've just made this conscious decision that you have to drown those people out and you can't let them bring you down.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As an anthropologist and naturopathic doctor, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Your business, body balance, and inner badass, these are the themes we are exploring. Before we jump into the interview, I want to invite you to join our free Facebook community, Legacy. If you want to be something amazing, you need to surround yourself with amazing people. The Legacy community is made up of badass women living, not leaving, but living our legacy every single day. We are leaders, parents, entrepreneurs, and innovators collectively committed to leaving the world better than we found it. My mission is to support the health and optimization of these badass superheroes, literally to places we never thought imaginable. If you are on a mission and get it, that your health is the key to your unlimited potential, then join us. We are super awesome. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/BE Legacy. See you there. Have you ever thought about quitting your job? Just walking in, saying, I've had enough, I'm out of here, and then committing yourself wholeheartedly to a new dream. A dream you've maybe been fantasizing about for a period of time, but you finally decided you are going to pursue because at the end of the day, if you didn't do it, you knew you'd have regrets. If that is you, or you know someone who's ever had that thought, this episode was created for you. Sarah Huggins was my guest today, and Sarah has an incredible story to share. She went from this comfy, cozy corporate gig as a lawyer to opening a restaurant focused on healthy food, uncomplicated food, wholesome food, and food that not only served the people who would come to her restaurant, but served as the foundation of a community that she has built here in Toronto. Sarah has an incredible journey to share. She talks about how she handled the criticism, how she stayed clear to her vision, and how she balances a new career as an entrepreneur with three young kids at home. For obvious reasons, I totally resonate with her story. I loved what she had to say, and we had so much fun while we did it. It is my pleasure to introduce you to Sarah Huggins. Sarah Huggins, welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Thank you. So fun to be here.
I know I just asked you this question before we get started, but can you just reframe for us where exactly you are recording this podcast episode right now?
Yeah, of course. So I am sitting in a basement at Yonge and St. Clair in Toronto. It's the basement of my restaurant, Mary B. Kitchen. It's much less stylish digs than I used to occupy as a lawyer on Bay Street. But I actually kind of like it better. So there you go. It's windowless, too. It's every good basement.
I have affectionately now termed this your podcast studio that you have in the basement of your restaurant. And what is so cool with this is you just touched on this, is that it's completely different than your previous digs as a corporate lawyer. Take us through this journey, because not only are we going to talk about health today, but we're going to talk about this like very true entrepreneurial journey where you're like, I had this secure, predictable profession, and then I just went for it. So tell us what happened. Tell us how you went about quitting your job and you launched Mary B. Kitchen.
Sure. So I worked my buns off to become a lawyer, as my parents will probably remind me all the time and would tell you if they met you. I worked my buns off in school. I went to university for 7 years and then spent 10 years practicing law. And when I tell people that I left, they're like, oh, yeah, I know, it's such a hard profession. Or, oh, yeah, I know, it's so difficult for women, you know, to make it in that profession. And that's not why I left. I loved it. I practiced first as a corporate commercial litigator at a big downtown law firm. And then I went on to the Toronto International Film Festival after I had my first child. And I was their in-house lawyer for a few years. And I, you know, not every day was amazing, but I loved so many aspects of it. And at the same time, I had this sort of aching passion for food. And many people say that, I know. But I, in the sort of short windows of free time that I have during my lawyer days, would creep downstairs to whatever bookstore I could find in the path or up the street and look at cookbooks. That was my escape. I spent my entire childhood watching cooking shows before the Food Network came around. So these were like really old school, like urban peasant James Barber, Yankin cook cooking shows that they had like on PBS and stuff. This was like my passion. And I knew that one day I had to do something that would really, really speak to that side of me. So I actually started a food blog. I thought, you know what, I'm going to keep practicing law and I'm going to start this food blog because I think that it will, you know, get me, doing some food related activities, but I'm not going to change my career, change my job altogether. So I started writing a family food blog for a few years, documenting the kinds of food. This was after I had my first child, and I was documenting the food that I was serving to my family. And I took a photography course so that I could figure out how to take pretty photos of my food. And it was great. And I loved it. And I got introduced to a whole new community of people, but even still, I wasn't entirely fulfilled. And my husband finally said, you know what, I want you to quit your job and figure out what you want to do. Because I talk all the time about opening up my own business and trying to brainstorm all sorts of different ideas for food products and you name it. And he said, if you don't just walk away from your stable job, you'll never do this. And I think that there are a lot of people that could do kind of like a side hustle thing. But when you have one child and then it became two children, when you have two children and a full-time job, there isn't a lot of time for a side hustle. So he said,
isn't that the truth?
Yeah. I wish that I could have held down a job and figured out what I wanted to do, but that just wasn't in the cards for me, my lifestyle. So I walked away. That was 3 years ago, June of 2015, 3 years ago, which is really hard to believe. And, you know, I didn't jump right into what I'm doing now. It was a really gradual process. I gave myself a lot of time to sort of ponder and think because I had spent my whole life pretty much running towards the law finish line. I needed a little bit of time to figure out what I was going to do next.
And then here we are.
So yeah, here we are at Mary B. Kitchen.
Yeah, like, okay, and we'll talk a little bit about how we first connected because I actually find it kind of funny. But opening a restaurant is no joke. So there's lots of people who are like, yeah, I'm super passionate about food, and yeah, I've got a food blog, and the leap from I'm going to open my own business to I'm going to open a restaurant. We're not just talking about like, you know, a little tiny restaurant in the wall and we're going to start small. You like did it. Like, this is a really big, beautiful, bold space. Where'd you find that courage?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because when I think about it that way, I guess it does seem like this really courageous, bold thing to do. But it happened so gradually that there was no one very courageous step. I think the most courageous step I took was walking away from my stable, very awesome mm-hmm. career. And from there, it was just like day after day, sort of like doing tiny little things that ultimately and making little decisions that resulted in, yes, a restaurant that is much bigger than I initially intended it to be and much more complicated. I think that I had a vision of something that was like just a great place to start out. Maybe, you know, a small 800 square foot little place with a few menu items, nothing big. And it ended up being a 2,500 square foot open from morning till night, 7 days a week operation. It was much more complicated than I ever imagined it would be. I think that I actually thought it would probably be more ideal to throw a food product out into the world or something like that. I just think for my lifestyle with a couple of kids, I now have three kids, that would probably, I imagine that would probably be a better idea than opening a restaurant, which is such a notoriously difficult and time consuming entrepreneurial path. But every time that I sat down to think about what I really wanted to do, it came back to the restaurant. And I think that's for one big reason. And that was that I couldn't imagine doing something where I didn't get to interact with people all day. And if I had to sit at home at my computer, or on the phone, I just didn't think I would be happy. And the restaurant was this opportunity to sort of fulfill my food passion, my passion for cooking good, healthy food, but also my passion for interacting with people and bringing that to the people. I get to see people all day, every day.
Yeah, if you weren't a food person, I suspect this would be a rather large challenge. You talked about how complicated it is opening a restaurant, and I can only imagine. Where did you learn to do that? Like, I suspect project management and organizational skills were something you inherently carried forward from your legal career, but running a restaurant is a different beast. Did you have mentors? Where did you learn?
You know what? I think for one thing, I spent a lot of time just sitting in restaurants, and my mind being a lawyer is sort of a trap. And so I would just sit and watch every single tiny detail. I also sat online and read a lot of Yelp reviews, which I know sounds a bit ridiculous, but it sort of gave me insight into what people were interested in, what they complained about, what the problems were. But I also hired a very wonderful consultant at the 15 Group in Toronto by the name of Jenny Companion. And she really became an operational partner for me in the early days, bringing to the table a lot of the skills and information that I didn't have. And I think actually, as I think back on the process, a lot of what I think it takes to be a successful business person, and I'm by no means there yet, is about assembling that right team of people who know how to do all the things that you don't know how to do.
It's a super great point, because I hear this as a pain point for entrepreneurs all the time, is that they feel like because they're starting out, they can't make that investment in the right people around them. And then they end up losing more money, or they crash and burn, or they never accelerate the way they want to, because you just can't hold all expertise at once.
No, that's right. And I think what expertise you can hold is what sort of the skill that I think is really valuable is finding the right people, is finding the good people. I found this amazing designer. His name is David. He's wonderful. He helped me develop the entire brand and all of the visuals that you see when you walk into the restaurant. And I could never have done all of that by myself. But what I credit myself with is finding him in the first place.
Well, exactly. Yeah, I say that actually about, we're doing renovation right now, and I say that about the team that's around me right now. People are like, do you love this? I'm like, no, I don't love it at all. But I know what I like, and I know how to find the people who can help achieve what I like in my space. And that's really... That's really what it's all about. So your space is really beautiful. And I just want to digress for 1 second to share the story about how we connected, because I just find it funny. So I was sitting in your restaurant, and I'm sure your team probably wanted to go home. And I was pounding away in the corner, and I finished my book. And so I did an Instagram live. I'm like, I just finished my book at Mary B. Kitchen. And then you wrote back, you're like, you're writing a book? And I wrote back and I said, yes. And then we got chatting. And then you're like, you have a podcast? I said, yes. You're like, we'd be on it. And then wasn't it the next week we were at a birthday party and our respective kids were there, and we'd the whole thing just came crashing together in terms of all of the serendipity and overlap, which is what I find happens, right? As you get into a state of flow and you start to align to brands and businesses that are congruent and consistent with your values, and suddenly those people just start popping up everywhere. Have you found, since you've engaged in this community, that you have new relationships and things are shifting? And is it different than when you were a Bay Street lawyer?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, definitely.
Are we way nicer?
Lawyers are wonderful people.
She's a politician too.
No, seriously. Lawyers, I mean, I came to Toronto to practice law. So some of my best friends, most of my best friends to this day are lawyers. And they're wonderful, compassionate, beautiful, amazing people. And now I've been introduced to, yes, is an entirely different group of people. And in fact, many groups of people. And that's actually the, probably the most beautiful part of what I get to do every day, is that I created a restaurant and I knew people would come here to eat, obviously, and to drink. But what I sort of didn't think about until it started happening is that people come here to eat and drink, but they actually come here to live out really important pieces of their life. And so I'll walk into the restaurant one day and there'll be people having a very important meeting in one corner. There'll be an older couple on a first date. There'll be a mom or a dad with a couple of children trying to persuade them to try kale for the first time. There will be, people on the phone making business deals. You know, people trust me with really important parts of their life. They come here to live those pieces of their life. And that's like such an amazing feeling. Like this is going to sound super cheesy, but it brings me to tears someday that this is what I've created. Like, I've created a restaurant, fine. That's one thing. But to create a place for people to go to live their life, that is what is really, I think, the most remarkable part of what I get to do. And I get to meet those people too. I get to witness this. And I have met so many wonderful people doing so many different things and coming here for so many different reasons, writing books being one of them. And that was actually probably the first example where you posted this on Instagram. I was like, what? Someone is writing a book at Mary B. Kitchen? Like, I'm so glad I did this.
Well, it's cool. It's a platform for community and probably like-minded people. And what's even, I think, neat about the space, and maybe this wasn't intentional, but I suspect it was, is it is actually a place that's conducive to working. Like, the way that you've set up the tables and the availability of plugs and just the landscape of the physical space makes it actually welcoming for people to interact with a restaurant and their lives in the same space.
Yes, that's right. And that was actually a point of argument between myself and some of the consultants and designers that we were working with. It's a bit bold to sort of offer a place for people to work, because as you can imagine, I spend a lot of money every month on rent. And to sort of offer those plugs to people, you take the risk that people will, overstay their welcome, or that they'll occupy the tables that other, paying customers might be looking for. And now and again that happens, and like once in a blue moon we'll need to shift someone from a four top over to the harvest table where they're just occupying a smaller part of the restaurant. But actually most of the time it means that this is just a place where people feel more welcome and where people feel like they can come at all times of the day. And so I think that overall it was a bit of a risk, but that it's been a great success.
So I want to circle back to something that you mentioned in passing at the beginning, but and maybe there's something there, maybe there isn't, but I feel like for a lot of entrepreneurs there are. And you said in passing something about, if you talk to my parents, they would really reiterate how hard I worked on law school and my legal career, and then here I am walking away from all of it. Was parents have expectations for their kids. Was that something you reconciled and had to work through, like how your parents would feel about a commitment that they probably felt like they supported significantly in terms of law, and then you became an entrepreneur? Because I know a lot of entrepreneurs talk to me about that. The last straw in terms of like, do I take the leap or do I not, is I don't know how to talk to my parents about this. I don't know if they're going to get it.
Well, my parents thankfully were hippies.
Oh, so they're pretty open-minded. Well, then forget that question.
They're hippies from the West Coast. I grew up in Vancouver. So my parents are very open-minded. But yes, they did support me through seven, what they might describe as sort of hellish years of university, in which I called them like once every couple days bawling about one or another like exam or paper that I was working on. And so they probably felt like maybe they could have done without that. And I could have skipped all that and gone straight to this entrepreneurial venture. I guess to answer your question, my parents are actually pretty supportive of the whole thing. I think it was more my perception of what they, and not just they, but other people's perception of what I was doing. And there's actually not my parents, but a woman, that a very, very, very successful lawyer that I used to work with, much senior to me, very, very accomplished woman. And was having a discussion with one of my former colleagues about Mary B. Kitchen and what I had done. And she, this very accomplished lawyer, said to my former colleague, to my friend, what a waste. What a waste of such great legal potential. And my friend defended me, thankfully.
But as friends do.
Thankfully. She said, no, I disagree. But I think there are people that are out there, whether it's your parents or people you used to work with, there are people that are going to have that reaction when you leave a career, especially something like law, to open a restaurant. And I think for me, I've just made this conscious decision that you have to drown those people out, and you can't let them bring you down, because it actually doesn't matter. And when I am on the eve of my death, as stressing as that is, like, the opinion of that very, albeit very accomplished lawyer is going to matter not at all, right? And so I think that kind of doesn't answer your questions, because you were asking about my parents, but my parents have been very supportive, and yet not everybody in my life has thought this is a really good idea.
But yeah, but you completely answered the essence of what I was getting at, which was like getting past those people who have a voice in your world to pursue what's right for you. And I do feel like it is an element of the entrepreneurial journey, of the hero's journey, of the it's a point of distinction between people who have said, I'm going to walk my path and my journey, and people are like, I'm not so clear on mine. And I usually find those comments come from people who in themselves are triggered, usually by the courageous actions of others. But it's I always find it fascinating. But you're right, it takes a very concerted psychology to compartmentalize those voices and create framework around them. And it's important to do that.
Yeah, I think so. And, I think that people have this misconception that you do some, I was a lawyer and now I'm not, or I was a teacher and I walked away, or whatever it is that you're sort of stepping aside from to do, to follow your path and follow your dreams or whatever it is you're doing. At the end of the day, you're not leaving that behind. Like, that is part of your journey, and that's part of what got you to where you are. I am still a lawyer. I practice law every single day at Mary B. Kitchen, just in a different way than I did before. I don't work in a law firm, but I put my legal skills and my critical thinking skills that I learned and practice so diligently as a lawyer, I put them to work all the time. And I don't think I would have been able to do this had I not, in the same way, with the same, quite the same vigor or approach as that, if I hadn't been a lawyer.
Yeah,
I hadn't spent all that time doing it, right?
Yeah, I agree. And it's I do the same thing when I work with businesses around business coaching and development. I always approach it from the same philosophical approach that I learned in naturopathic medicine, in terms of evaluating a problem upstream and in a functional capacity. And it's the same framework for me, with just different language. And it's really cool when your brain can do that. It has a transferable mindset from one vocation or one journey to the next. So let's leave your legal career as it was behind. Mm-hmm. And tell me a little bit more about your vision for Mary B. Kitchen, because everything I've heard so far is it's extremely intentional how you've created this space, and you're seeing this coming together. Where do you feel like this is going to go?
That's a really good question. And that is one question that my parents are asking me. They're very supportive, but they're like, what's next? I it's been 6 months, and I feel like I'm still scratching the surface of the opportunity that I've created for myself here. People ask me if I'm going to open other locations of Mary B. Kitchen. And I don't know that yet. That's not something I think about every day. I actually just get up and try to do the best job that I can on that particular day right now, because there's just so many moving parts and I'm responsible for all of them. I think, my vision is to create a place where people can eat hearty, healthy, and beautiful food all day long and not feel intimidated by sort of the dietary restrictions that I think that have sort of come to the language and the constructs and the diets and things that have come to sort of dominate the healthy food landscape recently. This is a place where you can just like, yeah, eat real food. Come on in. We have broccoli. Not intimidating, accessible to everybody. If you're not into broccoli, we also have macaroni and cheese. If you're vegan, great. If you're a meat eater, great. If your friend is paleo or keto, or awesome. We can accommodate that. We can have that conversation. We're here for you. If you want beer, awesome. If you're more into kombucha, that's cool too. We just wanted to be that sort of no gimmicks, no frills, place to eat healthy food.
So while I have a private audience with you on this, I would love to try that mac and cheese in a gluten-free version. Just saying.
It's true, actually, that we're doing a lot of menu innovation right now. Now that we're 6 months in, we have a little bit of breathing room to do a little bit of menu experimentation and change a few things up. So I will put that on the list by special request.
Amazing. People are like, why do you love to podcast? And I was like, this moment right now is why I love to podcast. You have three kids and a business.
Yep.
Okay. I get that. How do you do that? And I ask all my guests, and I'm going to heads up, I'm going to ask you about your morning routine in a few minutes, but like, how do you do three kids and run a business? Because every mom I talk to who's got kids in business, they do it differently and they have different priorities and things that are important to them. So like, what is your secret sauce that works for your family?
To be totally and brutally honest, my secret sauce is a caregiver that I employ full time.
That's awesome. And there should be no shame in saying that.
There is no, you know what? I feel like women, especially, no man would ever feel shame about telling anyone else that they have help at home with their children and their house, because everyone would just assume that they do, obviously, right? But I think women sort of are a bit ashamed to admit that they employ someone to do the things that they believe they're supposed to be doing themselves. And I'm just going to come right out and say, I'm not ashamed whatsoever. I could not run my life or hang on to my marriage without this woman. She is the rock that keeps us together and keeps us going. I mean, I have so much work to do and so much going on in my life. I couldn't do it without her. No question.
Well, and I find having help like that enables you to be fully present when you are with your kids, because you're not also thinking about your business and like there's so many elements that are taken care of that frankly you don't have to do. Like if someone can help organize the sports things and the this and the that, and like have one kid so you can have quality time with another, I think that's so, so important.
Yeah. And not everyone has the luxury of doing that. And it's not something I'll be able to probably do for, 20 years or anything. But for now, while my kids are young, it's what we need to do. And it's how we get by every day. And it's really important. She's important. We have no family in the city where we live. So she's just a really important piece of our life.
Yeah, no, I really love that. And is there something you do for you to be able to maintain this pace and engagement in what you're doing?
You know, right now, not really. For the first time in my life, ever, I think the one thing I'm not doing a very good job of is taking care of myself. I will say that I do exercise regularly, and that's just a sanity thing for me, and it makes me feel really good, and I just couldn't live without that. But sometimes I have to do it in the basement for 25 minutes while my kids are crawling all over me in the morning. That's the only option I have. The one thing I really need to find time for and to work on is just even just a month every day when I can escape out of my restaurant life and my family life to just kind of refresh myself and take just a little bit of a break. I don't know what I would do at this point, to be honest with you, but just not restauranting and mothering.
I actually find just sitting on a bench is sometimes lovely, rivaled only by grocery shopping alone. It's sometimes it's the small things, right?
I would love to go to a coffee shop and have someone else make me coffee. Because for the past 6 months, I've made my own wonderful coffee. Like, the thing is, I have this, like, amazing espresso machine at Mary B. Kitchen, and I have become, like, an accomplished latte artist. Who knew, you know?
Who knew?
And so I make my own coffee every day, or someone here, one of my even more accomplished latte artists, makes me a coffee. But I would love to just go sit in someone else's coffee shop for a day, and just read maybe a magazine and have them make me a coffee.
Well, right. Just being taken care of is such a nice, sure, a nice luxury when you're so busy taking care of everything else.
Yep.
I love this journey that you have taken us through, Sarah. What do you want your legacy to be?
Oh, that's a tough one. You know, it also, like, makes me think about death. Is that horrible? It's a real,
I think entrepreneurs should talk about death, but that's, like, a whole other conversation.
Makes me super uncomfortable. I think number one, and this is going to sound really trite and sort of cliche, but I do want my children to be proud of me and to be inspired by what I've done. I want them to grow up believing that if you work hard and you believe in yourself, you can do, you can make a career out of the thing that makes you happy. And I hope that they'll get at least that out of watching this journey, because I know that I, you know, they don't get as much attention from me as maybe some other children get from their parents. So I hope that they will grow up to be, whether they want to be entrepreneurs, whether they want to be professionals, whether they want to be stay-at-home mothers or fathers, I hope that they will grow up believing that they can follow whatever path makes them happy. But I think, and this goes back to sort of a point that I mentioned earlier, I really think that if all I can do is create a place, if it's one restaurant or multiple restaurants or whatever, that makes people happy, where they can, like I said, live out these really important pieces of their life, where they can meet a friend or make new friends or make important progress in their business or come up, hammer out some sort of agreement. If that's sort of all I end up accomplishing, to me, that there's so much joy in that for me every day. That's really the most wonderful part of what I do. And if that's it, if that's all it ends up being, that and my kids, you know, survive childhood, I think I'll be okay. Like, I don't need to change the world in any sort of significant way. I just need to make it a more joyful place to live in.
And I think you are accomplishing that. I think when I was looking around when I was in the restaurant last, and I found there's all people from all walks of life who were there. And as you say, doing all sorts of different things. But the common feature was you were normalizing real food. And I don't actually feel like that happens. There's so many influences in our life and in our society that normalizes fake food. And it was normal for those people to be eating real food where you could identify the vegetables in it. Like, it was actually really cool from my perspective to be able to look around and observe that as well.
Yeah, we have, it's interesting here because this intersection where we are, Yonge and St. Clair, it's such a funny spot in terms of the demographic. We got a lot of people from the different surrounding offices and then the sort of family neighborhood surrounding. But there's a lot of older people. By older people, I mean people my parents' age, you know, 60 and over. And they'll often come in and it'll be a couple, husband and wife. And the wife has clearly sort of dragged the husband in. And he'll look at the menu and say, oh, this is too healthy for me. I'm not into this healthy stuff.
That's awesome.
And it often happens in the afternoon when things are a little quieter. And when I have the opportunity, I will engage that person in conversation and find out that, like, actually, you know, we have lots of options that might appeal to him, right? Whether it's like the flank steak, the grilled flank steak, or the mac and cheese, or the broccoli, and soon we sort of win that person over. And the next thing you know, they're in here all the time eating KLCs or something they never thought they would ever touch, or you know, lentil dal, you know, they can't believe that they're touching vegan food. And so we convert people every day, I think, just by being non-intimidating, accessible, and just serving up things that are, yes, healthy, but mostly just really freaking delicious, in my opinion, anyways.
And you're doing a great job of it. Sarah, how would you define health?
How would I define health for myself is really just feeling amazing. For me, when I feel really good, I am healthy. I think that's the only way for me to measure it. And that's why I do and always have done all the sort of quote unquote healthy things that I do. I exercise, I sleep, I drink water, I eat healthy, all because it makes me feel so awesome.
Each month, I'm featuring a new Anthropology quiz to help you unlock and uncover some of the physical performance blocks that may be holding you back from your true potential. When you know better, you can do better. To learn more or to take the quiz, head on over to meganwalker.com/Anthropology quiz. And what a perfect segue into the final portion of the interview where I ask you something called your KPIs. So just like we have key performance indicators in our businesses, I believe we have these in our lives as well. So I've got 6 quick questions for you if you're ready for them. No math.
Go for it.
Okay. Do you have a consistent morning routine? And if so, can you share? You're like, I wake up.
You know what? Actually, my morning routine is lying in bed, watching Instagram stories. It's sort of like instead of watching TV at night, I do a lot of work at night once the kids have gone to bed. So I'll lie in bed for like 10 minutes, watch Instagram stories. I wish I could say that I meditated and drank lemon water and like all that kind of stuff, but I don't, because it's like my one chance when like nobody is asking for me to just do something super indulgent. And so that's what I do in the morning. My husband thinks it's like a huge waste of time, but I don't care.
Amazing. Fiction or nonfiction, what are you reading right now?
I am reading nothing. I recently downloaded Blinklist or Blinkist. And so I'm binging on summaries of nonfiction, like sort of self-help books, essentially. Lots of good like business advice in there. I don't have a lot of time to read all the books that I want to read. So this just kind of gives them to me in a quick nutshell.
It's such a smart tool. I love it.
It is awesome.
What is the one thing you are most consistent with respect to your health?
Exercise.
What's something totally badass about you that people would not otherwise know? That's my favorite question.
I my husband will tell you she is the biggest goody two shoes out there, except I swear like a trucker all day long.
What do you do for fun or play?
Not enough. I think these days about the most fun it gets is going out for dinner.
That's fun.
Although, you know what? I grew up in the West Coast doing lots of skiing and snowboarding. And this, I spent so many years pregnant and just with little babies and stuff. Finally got back into skiing this year, which was like so awesome. So I'm going to say that.
Perfect. And last question for you, Sarah. Entrepreneurism, are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
I definitely think we're born this way.
Look at that. Definitive.
Oh, man. I was definitely born to be an entrepreneur. I think my parents would definitely vouch for that.
Amazing. Sarah, it has been a pleasure to have you on the podcast. Where can people find out more about what you're up to? And we'll link it all up in the show notes.
Awesome. So you can find the restaurant online at www.marybkitchen.com. But we have most fun on Instagram at marybkitchen. You can also find my personal Instagram at kiwianbean. And that's where I, you know, post pictures of my kids and things that I cook at home and all that kind of great stuff.
The behind the scenes. Sarah, thanks so much for being here. This was so fun.
Thank you, Megan. This was fun. We need to meet up IRL, as they say.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Sometimes too.
If you enjoyed our conversation and would like to hear more, head on over to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribe to the Anthropology Podcast. We would also really appreciate a quick review. When people have their health, they can change the world. Let us keep you healthy and you go change the world.